Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Cold People and Other Fairy Tales from Nowhere by Felix Blackwell and Colin J. Northwood. Narrated by Matt Godfrey. World Behind the World. Felix Blackwell. The experience of many people with what we call the paranormal typically consists of uneasy feelings, unexplained sounds, objects moving. Sometimes it is a strange form caught just in the periphery of one's vision, only to vanish when noticed. But these things are all mere shadows on the wall of our dimension. Since I was a child, I've had the curse of seeing through those walls. I have seen the ones who cast those shadows. It was a rough breakup. I was a junior in college with my whole life ahead of me, but I couldn't pick myself up. She was the one I had dreamed of for many years, and the one I thought I'd wake up to for the rest of my life. And then she was gone. It was all my fault. I blamed myself every waking moment, and when I slept, she haunted my nightmares. I was, as my friends put it, in a bad place and needed to find my way out, so they insisted I socialize more. One night, my friends took me out to a movie. We romped around downtown Santa Cruz in the frigid winter air, bobbing in and out of the shops before the film started. When we couldn't take the cold anymore, we headed into the theater lobby. Christine and Kevin stood in line for snacks, while Nathan and I went looking for the bathroom. It was a Friday, and the whole theater bustled with young couples, professors, and generations of hippies. It was one of those upscale theaters. The bathroom was decadent, lined with sparkling black tiles and ambient lighting. Even the sink counters looked like marble. We shuffled in with several other random guys, and Nathan took the last urinal. I found a stall. I stood there, staring at the wall as I drained, almost hypnotized by the decorative metallic flecks in the tiles. Thoughts of my now ex-girlfriend surfaced in my mind from the depths where I tried to hide them. As I thought of her, the din of people and sinks and hand dryers all around me faded to silence. I shook off the thoughts and tried to flush, but the toilet did nothing. I tried again. The handle stuck. "Nice place," I said, then turned and exited the stall. The bathroom was now empty. The dozen people who were here just moments ago had vanished. I bent down and glanced under the long line of stalls. No feet. "Nate?" I called out. "You must have gone back to the lobby." I wasn't quite sure how everyone had left without a sound. "Breakup's making you a space cadet," I thought. It was quiet enough now that I noticed pop music playing through the speakers on the ceiling. The wall lights flickered, then went out. For just a moment, I stood there in absolute darkness, and then they came back on. I shrugged, headed to the sink, and tried to turn on the faucet. The tap was dry. "Real nice place." An ancient fear flickered inside me when the door to the lobby didn't budge. I instantly recalled the claustrophobia that I'd buried with my childhood, and the way it pressed down on my chest and throat. I rattled the door harder. It didn't open. It didn't even shudder under a spirited attempt. It was as though someone had affixed a useless knob to a metal wall where there had never been a door. I sucked in a deep, slow breath, swallowing back the primal urge to panic. My phone had reception, but neither Christine nor Nathan answered my call. I texted them both. "Locked in the bathroom. Get me the hell out of here. Not joking." Minutes went by. I bashed my fist against the door, issuing thunderous booms across the walls, but there was no response. Only the vapid pop songs kept me company. "There must be another way out," I thought. The bathroom had 6 stalls, 6 urinals, 5 sinks, painted tile floors and ceilings, and one door. One locked door. or rather the semblance of a door on one part of the wall. I examined every inch of the place, and beneath the long sink counter I found a vent panel. Cool air poured out of it. With the corner of my debit card, I loosened the four screws that held it to the wall. A 20-foot metal vent shaft lay before me, with faint light glowing at the far end. I ran a finger along the inside rim of the vent and studied the dust that caked it. Allergies be damned, I thought, trying not to imagine the legion of filthy bathroom germs I was about to wade through. I slipped into the duct head first, then propelled myself to the other side with my feet like a penguin on an ice sheet. There was not even enough room to crawl on all fours. There wasn't a vent panel on the far end of the tunnel. Instead, there was a wall of stench that hit me in the face before I reached the light. The stink was indescribable. Having lived in an old dorm hall with one giant bathroom, I was no stranger to foul odors. But this smelled less like a rancid bathroom, and more like rotting meat. The room I emerged into was a mirror image of the bathroom I'd just escaped. I reasoned that this must be the ladies' restroom. Anyone in here? I called out, hoisting myself off the ground and batting the dust off my shirt. Sorry, I was locked in the men's room. I could almost taste the horrid smell as I spoke. Nobody replied. The same music played in this bathroom, too, but it seeped out of the speakers like mud. It almost sounded like I was hearing it underwater. The rest of the place was a bit odd, too. Some of the lights were off, but even in the darkness, I could see that mold had grown over half the floor and one of the walls. It crept all the way up to the ceiling and spiraled out in different directions. The air was cold and moist. That claustrophobic flicker was blossoming into a robust fear within me. I went straight for the door, but as I approached, I noticed that it was completely overtaken by rust. The reddish-brown corruption took on the appearance of dried blood in the pale light. I reached out and yanked the doorknob. It snapped off in my hand and crumpled into little pieces. "Fuck!" I shouted. I threw the pieces to the ground and watched them skitter under the line of stalls. They collided with something wet. I knelt down and peered under the doors. There were feet. A woman's. Bare. The skin was gray and white, crisscrossed with purple veins. Long, putrid nails bent and curled away from the toes like the branches of a dead tree. Mold caked the spaces between the feet and the floor. My breath died in my chest. I snuck back to the vent, wide-eyed with terror, and crawled back in. I propelled myself back into the men's bathroom at light speed, then quietly slipped the vent panel back into place and made sure those screws were on tighter than ever before. But this bathroom was different now. Only one light remained on. It illuminated just a portion of the long room, whose floor was now stained with all manner of unspeakable filth. The one wall I could see had chunks torn out of it in the shape of nails or claws. The music that played was garbled, choppy, and completely off-key. A voice rang out from far off. It echoed all around me. I could not tell from which direction it came. It certainly didn't come from the speakers overhead. Echo. It sounded like an animal waking up from hibernation. It was coming from the vent. I squatted down and pressed my ear against the panel. Something was stirring on the other side of the tunnel from the women's restroom I just escaped. The feet immediately came to mind. "You," the voice croaked. It was a woman's voice. She laughed a weak, wet chuckle, then began to grumble indecipherably. Her voice crept up to a high-pitched strain, then dropped down to a much lower octave, deeper than a man's. My intestines knotted up.
"You,"
she groaned, enthusiasm building in her voice. The speech carried through the vent and bounced all around me. I leaped to my feet and tried the locked door again to no avail, then ran to the stall I had pissed in. My intention was to stand on the toilet and hide, in hopes that whatever was on the other side of that duct would not crawl in here and find me. I pulled the stall door open. The toilet was gone, seemingly ripped from the floor. In its place, a maw of darkness yawned before me. It was so deep that I couldn't see the bottom, but sounds of dripping water echoed from within. I stood there at the edge of the broken tiles, staring deep into the void, wondering if I was meant to go in, wondering if it had been opened up for a reason. Soft, raspy breathing disrupted my ponderings. I glanced behind me, back at the vent. The outline of a face appeared in the shadows, partly obscured behind the panel. Deep, dark eyes stared out at me, watched me. But these eyes didn't study me. Somehow, they already knew me. I didn't have to jump. The sight of that face compelled me forward under the force of terror. I fell headfirst into the impossible abyss. My shoes squeaked across the tiles as I slid in. The sensation of falling did not overtake me. No wind rushed up from below me. My stomach did not leap into my throat. I felt suspended, still, unmoving in the velvety black. I reached my hands out and discovered a metal surface before me. The hole I'd fallen into was gone, and the only light now was a line of pale white where my feet rested. I felt around the metal surface until my hand fell on a knob. It was a door. I shoved it open and beheld another bathroom, just like the two before it. The second my brain processed this room, gravity caught up with me and dragged me straight down. If I hadn't been holding the doorknob, I'd have fallen deeper into the dark. Instead, I dangled there, yelling and cursing, trying to hoist myself up into the wretched bathroom. My legs flailed all around as I pulled myself up. There was nothing to step on. It was as if the bathroom itself hung in an empty void. The moment I flopped onto the dirty tile floor, the door slammed shut behind me, and a chorus of demonic screams rang out behind it. I lay there on the floor, shaking violently, trying not to cry. Water droplets trickled all around me. Above the sinks, a single lamp flickered, but its light didn't even reach the stalls a few yards away. Someone could very well have been in this bathroom with me. I pulled myself up and hobbled to the sinks, rubbing my face with desperation. "You're having a psychotic episode," I thought. "You've completely lost it. Are you high? Did you drink anything that wasn't yours tonight?" I stood under the dim light and checked my eyes in the mirror. Pupils aren't dinner plates. That's a good sign. I pried my eyelids open. "Healthy white. You aren't high. Mental breakdown it is." While looking at my reflection, I noticed something different about this bathroom. Unlike the two before it, this one had another mirror on the wall behind me. Both mirrors faced each other, creating the appearance of an infinite succession of bathrooms all in a row. I saw hundreds of copies of me, trailing off into forever in either direction. I studied the many copies of myself, how they grew dimmer and fainter as they withdrew into the apparent distance. The closer reflections of me were accurate, but the farther ones appeared more and more distorted. My eyes looked impossibly dark, My face grayed and sunken, even my teeth yellowed in those wretched duplicates that stood far off. Something else caught my eye. Something moving. I peered hard down the line of images. The endlessness of it dizzied me, but I distinctly perceived a figure moving around in one of the distant reflections. It was too tiny to make out. I spun around, checking the mirror behind me, and looked all around the room I stood in. No one here. My eyes returned to the figure, which was now close enough for me to see that it was a person, or something with a humanoid shape, at least. It bobbed up and down, periodically dipping beneath the threshold of the reflection that contained it. It got closer and closer and closer. There were hundreds of duplicates of me, but only one of it. Finally, the person got close enough that I could get a better look. Only a few dozen reflections into the vast series of them, I could make out the form of a woman. She was crawling from one reflection to the next, crawling over their edges like a person climbing through a window on all fours. She moved like an animal, and periodically gazed straight at me. She was coming for me. I backed away from the mirror and bumped into the one on the wall behind me. I glanced over my shoulder. The woman was not shown in any of those reflections, only the one at the sinks. Now she was close enough that I could make out her features. Her skin was gray and bruised, and instantly reminded me of the feet I'd seen before. The head was partly bald. Clumps of stringy brown hair drooped over her face.
"You,"
she groaned, reaching for me with a shaking hand. A scream exploded from my lips and echoed around the bathroom. The woman's dark eyes lit up with horrific glee, and her tongue slid back and forth across her jagged teeth. She was only a few reflections away now, and her gaze was fixed upon me. Those hypnotic eyes and the death within them drove me to the edge of madness. Tingling pain seared across my skull and down my neck. I tried to move, but my body barely responded. There I stood, back against the opposing mirror. There was nowhere to run. "I'm going to die. She's going to eat my face." Suddenly, an idea occurred to me. I pulled the cell phone out of my pocket and whirled around. With all my strength, I smashed it against the second mirror over and over until the glass shattered and fell to the floor. Then I turned around and faced the mirror at the sinks. The infinite series of reflections fell away, and with it, the image of the crawling woman. After a moment, the mirror reflected only my own image in the bare tile wall behind me. I took a deep breath of the dank bathroom air and savored my small victory. But my relief was misguided. The woman's voice cried out in the dark from far away.
"I remember your name."
This bathroom was the same as the ones before it. It had the same layout, including the vent beneath the sink counter. When I looked at the steel panel that covered it, I recognized those same eyes from before, peering up at me from the shadows.
"Felix!"
she shrieked, bashing her corpse-like hands against the metal. It bent and squealed under her rage. A screw popped off. I ran straight for the door I'd come in, not caring about the endless void on the other side. Better to die out there than in here. To my surprise, the door opened up into a hallway. Inexplicably, the abyss was gone. Without a second thought, I bolted into the hall and slammed the door shut behind me. The hall was so long that I couldn't see the end. The walls were perfectly straight all the way down, and so precisely constructed that the symmetry made me dizzy. A light fixture hung from the ceiling every few yards, illuminating the ground beneath it. Each was far enough from the next that the space between them was completely dark, giving eerie contrast to the scene. Dozens of small rusty pipes ran across the length of the ceiling, stretching into forever.
"Felix,"
the woman moaned behind the door. I was already 20 steps down the hallway. I came to a set of doors, one on each side of me, beneath the first light. Each was marked with a blue triangle that read, "Men's Restroom." I continued past them, hoping to find an exit up ahead. The door I came out of crashed open behind me. My pursuer rounded the corner on her hands and feet, barreling toward me like a tiger. Pure terror fueled my muscles. I rocketed down the hall, screaming bloody murder. Doors rushed past me. 2, 4, 10, 20. Every single one of them was identical, right down to the blue sign. "Where the fuck am I?" I shouted in rage and fear. The woman moved with terrifying speed. The clattering of her long toenails grew louder, and the smacking sound of her palms on the cold cement reverberated off the walls and deafened me. She was closing in. The hall went on and on. There was no end. There was no way to tell if I had even gone anywhere. Every light, every door, every length of pipe was exactly the same as the last. My body grew heavy with exhaustion. I glanced over my shoulder. The woman had reared up onto her legs and was running after me with her arms dangling at her sides. Her legs bowed and flailed inhumanly as she moved. Her head was craned up and to the side, like she was looking at the pipes above us, but her eyes were rolled all the way back as if she were in the midst of a seizure. The horrifying image of it all caused me to lose focus and trip over my own feet. I lost balance and started to wobble all over the hall, desperately trying not to lose speed. The woman was only 5 or 6 steps behind me and was closing in. In a last-ditch effort to escape her, I grabbed the handle of a random bathroom door and plowed into it shoulder first. My feet slipped out from under me. "That's it," I thought to myself. "You're dead." The door flew open under my weight, and I sailed through its frame, completely airborne. My body landed in a heap on popcorn-littered carpet. Bright fluorescent lights blinded me. All around, I could hear gasps. Recognizable music played somewhere above me. I instinctively covered my head and curled into a defensive ball. But when no cold hands fell upon me, I opened my eyes and looked around. It was the theater lobby. Patrons stood all around me, amazed at my display. Their worried faces lined the room. Even the teenager working the concession stand stopped scooping popcorn to examine me. I looked behind me. The men's room door was open, and inside were 3 guys trying to get a look at me.
You all right there?" one of them called out.
The light above him was bright and full. The walls around him were immaculate and free of the stains and mold I'd seen before. It took me a long moment to compose myself.
"Yeah," I replied, brushing myself off and clambering to my feet. "I'm good."
I dashed off to the theater to find my friends, trying to ignore the curious stares of 2 dozen onlookers. The movie had already started. As I stumbled to my seat in the dark, I couldn't help but think to myself, I should have stayed home. There are bad places in this world, or perhaps between this one and the next. And I dreaded the conviction that this visit would not be my last. Icebreaker, Part 1. Felix Blackwell. The darkness that plagues my life was not born with me, but rather transmitted down through the generations. It came from long ago, from far away, and chose my family for a reason I do not yet understand. It was my grandfather who first peered into that darkness. It peered back and saw something it liked, something it wanted. And so our suffering began.
It was 1968. My grandfather, Martin Blackwell, was on a ship headed through the northerly reaches of Baffin Bay, inside the rim of the Arctic Circle. He was a geologist working with the U.S. military and was on an expedition to survey Greenland's ice sheet. The government wanted to know if it could build a top-secret nuclear missile installation there for rapid counterstrikes on the USSR in the event of major attack. They sent the Hypatia, an expedition ship with a crew of 4 scientists and 2 engineers, all of whom they'd contracted through America's most prestigious universities, and 31 Navy servicemen of various stripes. It was expected to be a 7-week mission. What they found was not nearly what they came for. On the 10th day of the voyage, beneath the glow of a full moon, one of the sailors spotted a dark shape in the distance. It appeared to be another ship anchored against an ice shelf. After obtaining clearance from high command, the crew decided to approach. The mysterious ship was absolutely colossal. The Hypatia rose only to its hull and could fit 6 of itself bowed astern alongside it. High above her as she passed, a Cyrillic sign loomed over the smaller vessel, no doubt the name of the strange craft. It took command only minutes to determine that this was no ordinary ship. It was a Soviet nuclear icebreaker. Even more, it was the only Volga-class icebreaker ever built. Once a floating city that housed nearly 400 men, the thing now sat as still as death, skewered against the ice and half consumed by creeping frost. Its immensity cast an abyssal shadow on my grandfather and the other men as they gathered on deck in awe. The name translated to the Spear of Kutuzov. After much deliberation, High Command altered the mission objectives. My grandfather's crew was now responsible for investigating the abandoned ship and recovering any Soviet weapons and documents on board. The U.S. government feared that the Soviets were planning to nuclearize Greenland first, and so it wanted to know the nature of their latest secrets. The enormity of the spear indicated that it might be carrying nuclear missiles, so it became America's top military priority overnight. Although unprepared for a task of this sort, Martin obeyed his orders and accompanied a party of 16 other men onto the icebreaker. They scaled its hull in the dark using a harpoon gun as a rappelling device and found themselves on the deck of a perfectly seaworthy vessel. Aside from thick layers of ice that had conquered most of its surface, the spear looked to be rather new. The servicemen disassembled a door and made their way to the bridge, where they discovered the ship's logbook. One of the sailors had basic Russian training, and gleaned the following information from the logbook and other documents found there. At the time of the most recent entry, the spear housed 318 souls, including one admiral, whose presence was highly unusual. The destination and recent coordinates of the ship were inconsistent with its current location, suggesting a top-secret itinerary. Few other details could be ascertained. Many of the documents appeared phony. Scrawled near the bottom of the last page was the sentence, "We let them in." It was dated September 6, 1967, more than a year before Martin and his team had arrived. The men began a search of the ship. On the deck and first level, there were no signs of her crew. The secret of their whereabouts was well kept, for behind each door and hatch lay only another silent passageway or empty cabin. The engineers checked the stability of the craft's electrical equipment and found it to be in working order. There were no signs of an attack or any sort of toxic leak, so the team descended to the second level. It was darker down here. Fewer of the lights worked, and many of them buzzed and crackled, as though the power grid was straining against failed circuitry. Furniture and personal effects were scattered throughout the passageways, suggesting either that the ship had been violently searched, or that the crew had very hastily fled. Martin staggered through the long corridors in search of answers, but each turn presented only more questions. At the end of a narrow passage, he discovered the ladder.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?